Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 19th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. I'm glad to see you've made it through the woes, the trials and tribulations of the MBTA, but I'm glad you're with us. So, DR, there's a continuing story here in New England, one that people are increasingly exhausted by, shall we say. Mm-hmm. It's the weather. Mm-hmm. We have had in the last month a nearly record-breaking amount of snow. And mm-hmm. what compounds that misery is that the snow has come on, you know, over the course of a month instead of being stretched over the course of 3 or 4 months, right? The same amount of snow. Huge amounts of snow, right? So tell me, is this proof that global warming doesn't exist?
The polar opposite, actually, to coin a phrase. There was a great piece in the February 15th edition of the Boston Herald by Jim Cantore of the Weather Channel explaining why we're getting so much. And he noted, quote, warm water means you can add more fuel to the storm. The offshore temperature outside Georgia's Bank is about 50 degrees. What you have is Arctic air over the Gulf Stream. It's helping to add more inches to the snowfall. And he goes on to basically make the point that when you have warmer ocean temperatures, you will naturally have more precipitation. And on cold days, you will have an onslaught of snow. So it doesn't disprove anything as much as the deniers want to think so. In fact, it validates.
It's entirely consistent. I think the other interesting sort of scientific point, besides the idea that the warmer water is make more humid air, is the idea of the jet stream. And it's my understanding. So, of course, the jet stream is something you always see on the weather report, and it's this trough of jet stream air you see over the United States. But most people don't realize that that jet stream basically goes all the way around the North Pole and links back up to itself. So it's a continuous flow of air around the pole. But as the temperatures of the Earth have increased, the deviations of that Gulf of the jet stream down south have increased. So you have these big, huge deviations that allow the cold Arctic air to spin down. So there's sort of this combination of a more erratic jet stream allowing the polar vortices, shall we say, to escape, plus the warmer water and more humid air giving these much more intense snowstorms. So it's important to remember that that what we're seeing is consistent, but I got a different. It's consistent with the global warming predictions. Mm-hmm. But DR, this past week, the guy you mentioned, Jim Cantore. So anyone who's watched the Weather Channel knows that Jim Cantore is a big personality, right? He's the guy they send out into every bad weather situation. But there's a video, and probably people have seen it. He's in Plymouth, Massachusetts, right on the water, literally screaming over big blasts of thunder that are coming down as he's standing there in an open field, right? Did you see that video?
Yes, yes, and just basically enjoying the thunder snow, as they call it. It is an interesting phenomenon. His theatrics are also very, very interesting.
I guess the question I have is specifically about thunder snow. And as I was saying, as a much younger man many years ago, being, you know, basically with my parents being brought out in a snowstorm and hearing thunder and during a snowstorm and feeling how weird it was. And of course, since that time, this is now 50 years ago, it's been very rare for me to experience thunder in snow. But over the last 10 years, all of a sudden we have this new term, thunder snow, that now is commonplace, right? And Jim Cantore gets excited about it. Everyone knows what it is. And I guess I don't know if that phenomena was common and I just missed it, or if this is some new aspect of global warming that snuck in. What's your take on that?
Well, the great resource that known as a Wikipedia notes that this term actually cropped up as early as 1991. And so the thunder snow was a phenomenon in what's known as the perfect storm. If you remember that George Clooney movie, there was thunder snow occurred during that particular snow. And I do remember. The blizzard of 2003 in the Northeast, where we experienced what was called at the time on the television news thunder snow. So it is one of these very, very interesting phenomena, and it goes to show you that, you know, extreme weather is not to be trifled with, and it can be awesome and simultaneously awful.
Well, and I guess I don't know. I have a feeling that. I do not remember thunder snow through my time, and now I hear about it more than I care to. But I guess one of the things that, you know, when we come back to the snow, everyone's sick of talking about the snow, especially because it is so historic. Mm-hmm. But if it's consistent with the climate models, that is to say that extreme weather events, when they happen, are even more extreme, it seems to me we're kind of looking at the future. And so what's happening in Boston now is kind of a dress rehearsal for the way things are going to be. And it seems like what we're seeing, especially, I think, with not the collapse of the MBTA, but the problems on the MBTA, an older, not very well maintained, not very well funded transport system has got everyone up in arms. And my feeling is that we better get used to it because this is just a taste of what's coming. Am I off base on that?
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think it was Peter Sinclair who runs the great site Climate Denial Croc of the Week who's noted that climate scientists such as Jim Hansen and Michael McCracken pointed out back in like 1981 and 1982, that in a warming world, you will see in the Northeast, in places like Boston, extreme levels of precipitation, including extremely intense snowstorms. Mm-hmm. So this is something that's been well known to people who pay attention to science and who don't ignore science. So it's like, you know, there are no excuses for us. We knew what we were getting into if we took it seriously.
And I think that what this current period shows is the vulnerability of modern society to these weather events. And I guess part of me thinks that we're all wound up about digging out the snow. You don't even have the chance to process in your head the fact that this is a climatic change, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's focused on the immediate present. And as going into the future, as these events become more and more likely, you can see where a society would lose its focus long term and just be trying to keep its metaphorical nose above the waterline, right? With all this intense weather coming in. So it's I guess I'm just thinking this is a taste of what's to come. So.
And it goes to something that developed over the last week, where on the February 13th edition of HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and on the February 16th edition of The Reed Report on MSNBC, Bill Maher and Bill Nye respectively noted how the mainstream media, when they cover these extreme weather events, they consistently fail to put it in the context of a changing climate. And Nye, in particular, was quite impassioned, saying, you know, basically urging the media to, you know, talk about this within the context of climate change, make the point that these sort of extreme weather events are not unprecedented, not surprising. These were things that were predicted 20 and 30 and 40 years ago by the top climate scientists around the world. So that people aren't confused and that people understand that we're going to get a hell of a lot more of this if we don't take action to reduce carbon pollution.
I'll just note for our listeners, especially those in the Boston area, I was on the Globe, the Boston Globe's op-ed web page this morning, and they are inviting comments about how the editorial page, what topics the editorial page should consider over the coming year. Of course, there's the Boston Olympics, there's the MBTA, there's the new governor, all kinds of stuff. I sent them a short note, and I would urge other people to do the same, to tell the Boston Globe that its editorial position, its editorials can be on anything that they want it to be, but they should always come from a climate perspective. That whenever they talk about any issue, whether it's the Olympics or whether it's the MBTA or immigration or healthcare or urban planning or whatever, they ought to at least include some discussion of whether this helps or hinders the efforts to keep the planet viable. So that's a shout out to our folks to send a note to the Boston Globe and tell them what how they ought to conduct their op-ed page. So,
Exactly. And
go ahead, DR.
I was going to note that speaking of the Globe op-ed page and the Globe and so the Globe editorial and op-ed pages, there was a very interesting cartoon syndicated from the Washington Post, Tom Tolles, that ran on the February 17th edition of the Boston Globe, in which two frogs are in a boiling pot, and the frog on the left says 2014 was the hottest on record, and the frog on the right, notice that, says stovetop temperatures change all the time. And I was fascinated by the decision to select that because, as longtime readers of the Globe know, there's a certain individual who writes for the paper who, over the course of the last 21 years, has consistently made the argument that global temperatures fluctuate all the time, and thus there's no human-caused climate change. So you can't help wondering if that's a sort of very, very subtle dig on the part of the person who made the selection to run that cartoon against that sort of
That unnamed
article.
calmness that
Exactly. I mean, no, and notice the position of the frog on the right. It's very, there's a lot of subtext behind not only the editorial cartoon, but also the decision to run it. So I think that's very interesting and should not go without notice.
So the other thing beside the weather, there is other news and other topics. So the other interesting topic that came up this week, and again, most people have probably saw it one place or another, but there was a huge train explosion of a train carrying, I mean, fracked petroleum from the Bakken Shale through West Virginia on its way to Yorktown, Pennsylvania for refinement. And that train went up like a bomb, right? I'm sure you saw the pictures of it, right?
Yes, it was a. What was that old Aerosmith song? Train kept a rolling. In this case, the train did not keep a rolling. The train exploded, and it's just it was just a horrifying thing. And I think that MSNBC's Rachel Maddow noted on the February 18th edition of her show that there was one person whose house exploded, and they basically said that if they had not gone out in the nick of time, they would have died. They would have burned to death as a result of this oil train derailment. And it just goes to show you, the extreme risks of extreme energy and how this stuff is not safe and cannot possibly be made safe.
Well, there was a couple of interesting facts. I think I saw something on Rachel Maddow's show as well. But it turns out that the fracked material, and I'm not sure what it is, exactly what it is, but this sort of, I don't think it's natural gas, but it's something that they've gotten out of the Bakken oil shale, contains a lot of different, shall we say, weight fossil fuels. And that within this stuff, there's butane. Of course, butane is what's in your cigarette lighter. Not my cigarette lighter, because I don't smoke, but a cigarette lighter, right? Butane, pentane, these very light, extremely volatile, highly explosive compounds are mixed in to this kind of Bakken shale oil. And that gets put into the tanks. And that's what exploded. And that you can treat the material to get the pentane and the butane out of it, but it's more expensive to do that, of course. And then you have no place to put the captured pentane and butane if you're out in the middle of North Dakota someplace. So that's one fact that I hadn't realized, that this stuff is pretty volatile. And the second is the cars that blew up, or the cars that destroyed, are in fact themselves the new model, allegedly safer transport cars. And so it just goes to show, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, right? They try and make better train cars, but they blew up anyway.
And the fascinating thing, there are two fascinating dynamics here. Number one, in the February 18th edition of the New York Times, it was reported, quote, "It was not clear whether the unusually low temperatures or the snowstorm barreling through the region at the time had played a role in the accident," which means that potentially this was an accident caused by climate change, which worsened the climate change. It's like a death cycle.
It's a self-fulfilling thing.
And the other thing I can't help noting is that apparently a gentleman named Britt Baer, who is a personality on the Fox News Channel, suggested that because of this explosion in West Virginia, this is why we need to have the Keystone XL pipeline. And I thought to myself, what a curious lack of logic there.
People make this argument. They say that, you know, there's thousands more trains going through dense communities, and wouldn't it be safer to have the Keystone XL pipeline? Right? And it's something that climate hawks need to have thought about and have a response for, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the story? Is it safer or not safer to go via the pipeline versus the trains?
Well, I'll go to an argument that I think was a Bob Kincaid made on the, I believe, the February 17th edition of All In with Chris Hayes. He's a resident of West Virginia, and he's talked about the risks of extreme energy in West Virginia. And he said that the safest thing to do is not to move these things by train, not to move these things by pipeline, but to keep the damn stuff in the ground. That's what has to be emphasized the most.
And I think that's the first response of the climate hawk. When someone says, oh, it's safer to go by pipeline or by train, the response is, that's a false choice. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to even answer that question, because we don't have to answer that. We just, as you say, leave it all on the ground. There are other ways to do it. I heard a report, I think that you had sent it through from the Green News Report, saying that still in all, there's more oil spilled and more damage done from pipelines than by transporting with trains. So it's, I mean, this whole question of trains versus pipeline is one that will continue to evolve. It's a very dynamic thing, and it's a good thing for climate hawks to have contemplated and figured out what they think about that question, or at least have know what the two sides are, right?
Exactly. But when you look at these images, I mean, you have to say to yourself, if you're a logical person, how can this possibly be made safe? I mean, this looks like something out of a Michael Bay movie, basically.
One of my other responses is that in addition to calling this trains versus pipelines a false choice, you say, well, first of all, we're going to stop the KXL pipeline, and then we're going to stop the trains, because neither one is safe, right? We'll take them one at a time, because you have to know that the pipeline people do not want to be using trains, or else they would have done that from the beginning. Right?
Exactly,
so by forcing this stuff onto the trains, it's more expensive, which can only be good for us, right? And then if you're going to drive trains through the middle of Philadelphia, there's going to be more people concerned about that, and more problems for the shale oil people.
And the sad thing is, you know, it was a CSX train, and if you've heard of commercials that are constantly run on cable television, you know, the tagline is CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Right.
Well, you know, if these things keep exploding, there might not be people moving tomorrow.
So there's I'll just note in passing, since we're noting things in passing, we'll put up a link to an NPR report about earthquakes in Oklahoma. And of course, there's this huge upsurge in earthquakes in the middle of Oklahoma, which is typically better known for its tornadoes than its earthquakes. And of course, the earthquakes are caused by the re-injection, or at least a plausible scientific case, let me say, that the earthquakes that are all of a sudden happening are due to the re-injection of high-pressure fracking water that's come up from the other. And I think one of the heartbreaking things for me personally, maybe other people have different opinions, but they went to the town manager, and the town manager says, oh, look, we have earthquakes, but yeah, we have a new basketball court across the street, and we paved the roads. Isn't it's well worth it? Which I thought was a funny thing to say.
I saw that quote from that city manager. I thought to myself, that is a perfect example of Stockholm syndrome.
Well, exactly, right? I mean, what else can you say? Right? Well, okay, so speaking of Stockholm and prisoners and whatnot, DR, you pointed me at a report that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who always get their activists, have been tracking Keystone XL people?
Mm-hmm. It's a sleazy and frightening story coming from the Toronto Globe and Mail, and also from the UK Guardian. It was reported that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police was leaked apparently to Greenpeace, knowing that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police identifies anti Keystone XL activists as a national security threat to Canada. The report also, according to Brad Freeman and Desi Doyen of the Green News Report, the report also has a series of these sleazy attacks on climate science, and they basically refer to activists as a well-financed organization trying that is anti-petroleum and anti-Canada. I guess wanting to have a safe climate is anti-Canada.
Right, and this follows on the report we saw last week where the FBI is here in the United States is checking out Keystone XL activists. So it's just be aware, don't be paranoid, but these are issues we're going to have to come to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's especially frightening on the heels of that FBI report from last week that the FBI is monitoring anti-Keystone XL activists. It's like, you know, these guys are getting really, really nervous and really, really paranoid. And, you know, it's not paranoia if they're really after you.
So, DR, we got to put it down there. But I do want to remind everyone, all of our listeners, especially those in the Boston area here, that on Sunday, March 15th, 2015, at Northeastern University, the Massachusetts Climate Action Center and the Toxics Action Center will have the Local Environmental Action Conference, our annual conference. It's a great opportunity to join community leaders, environmental advocates, activists from across New England for an exciting day of skills training, networking, and inspiration. So please think about going to that conference. It's intentionally made accessible, price accessible. It's on the Green Line, so it's travel accessible. Please mark your calendar to attend the conference at Northeastern University on March 15th, 2015. Right? I'll be there, right? You'll be there, DR?
Definitely, definitely.
All right, so you can check out the links to most of what we talked about here at our blog. It's a WordPress blog. You can find us on Facebook. It's /MassClimateAction. Please listen to us, share us so your friends can learn about us. You can listen to us on Stitcher or at iTunes. Search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our action, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thanks, DR, for being here.
Thanks.
Talk to you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.